your Bibles with me this morning over to the book of John, John chapter 4. If you don't have a Bible and you'd like one, our ushers will be in the aisles now ready to give you a Bible. Of course, you can feel free to use a Bible app off of your iPhone or iPad or Kindle or whatever your mode of transportation is to get to John chapter 4. Just get over to John. We're going to have fun this morning. We're continuing on with our message series entitled The Lord of the Rings. And what we're enabling to do and what we're desiring to do is to bring God back into this marriage covenant. We said last week that God doesn't want you to just survive in your marriage. He wants your marriage to thrive, to be full of life and love and passion, for your marriage to be exciting and the most precious thing you have on this earth other than your relationship with Him. When marriage is done right, it does just that. It's a source of life that literally can improve not only the quality of your life at home, but the quality of your life everywhere. And so what we're talking about is how to have great marriages. And we said last week that if we're going to have a great marriage, we need to understand that falling in love, all it requires is a what? A pulse. Just wake up and you can fall in love. I mean, it takes no effort. It takes no energy. Anyone can fall in love. Falling in love, all it requires is a pulse. But we said staying in love requires what? A plan. And it's a plan that we need to know. And God's got a plan for our marriage. And what we aim to do in this series is to show what is God's plan for staying in love, for having marriages that thrive. And then after that, we want you to put in the work. The work that it takes to having a great marriage. Once you know the plan, you have to work the plan. And we said, is that some work? Yeah. Can it get hard? Yeah. But we said, doing that is a whole lot easier than having a bad marriage. Isn't that the truth? Yeah, you know, I don't know if anyone could testify from personal experience, but there's nothing better than a great marriage. But from what I've seen and pastoring for 10 years, there appears to be nothing worse on this earth than a bad one. And so, it does take some work to have a great marriage. And that work sometimes can be hard because you're having to put under your flesh. But it's a whole lot easier than having a bad marriage. We said the key to a great marriage is you have to make love a verb. If you want a great marriage, you have to make love a verb. And what we said last week was this: it's not enough for you to have feelings of love towards your spouse. That's good. You need to have those feelings. But we said that's not enough. We said your spouse needs evidence that you love her, that you love him. That just like any case detective coming up with a conclusion, you know, if you've ever watched any of those detective shows, in order for them to draw a conclusion, they need some evidence. They need to hear some things. They need to see some things. And the same is true in the marriage covenant. If you're going to have a great marriage, you've got to give your spouse evidence that you love her, that you love him. She needs to be seeing some things, some acts of love. He needs to be hearing some things. And the best marriages are one where the other spouse is looking after the interest of the other. And they're coming underneath them and helping them be lifted up into a better life. And they're serving them with love. We said the key to a great marriage is you have to make love a verb. Now, I'm excited today because today we're going to do some live marriage counseling. I'm excited about it. I think we're going to get a lot out of it. But before we do that, let me say this to kind of prep for this marriage counseling. People think that if you have two good people getting married, that automatically equals a good marriage. But we said last week that can't be true because we know a lot of good people who got married but they're not having any fun at it. We said last week, we looked at the Bible over there and the T's, and we saw where Paul wrote and said, guys, you need to teach the older men so that they can teach the younger men how to love their wives. And we said that where Paul wrote and said, guys, you need to teach the older women to teach the younger women how to love their husbands. Here's the bottom line. If all of us came into marriage with a healthy heart, we could have healthy marriages. And here's what I mean by a healthy heart. I was reading this thing the other day from these people who are saying that the marriages that stay together, and not only stay together but seem to have the most fun in doing it, are relationships that have these types of qualities. I'll just read them to you real quickly. They have respect. That makes sense. You have one person respecting the other person. They have comfort. You feel comfortable being around your spouse. And what that simply means is you can be yourself and they like that. That's a good thing when you can be yourself and they like you. And so you have that degree of comfort in a relationship. You have acceptance in a relationship. That, yeah, they may have some issues, but I'll make an allowance for them. I'll accept them. You have appreciation when things are done right. Instead of complaining about what wasn't right, you get appreciation for what is right. They have affection. That's a good thing to have, right? You have affection to people who are loving each other and showing that love through physical touch. You have encouragement. Where they're encouraging the dreams of the others. You have support and you have attention and you have approval. And they were saying that if you're going to have a great marriage, you need these things. But they said not only that, your kids need to see these things. Because if they see these things in your marriage, then it'll prep their heart for the marriage they're going to get into later. And that'd be wonderful if you saw all of those things where growing up you saw attention and you saw affection and you saw support and you saw allowances and you saw love. And I'm sure there are some people in here who you did see a relationship like that. Maybe it was your father and mother. Maybe it was a grandparent or a mentor or someone along those lines where you saw how to do this thing called marriage and you implemented those behaviors into your family when you started one and you had a healthy heart. But the reality is that most people didn't see those things. In fact, a lot of people have seen the complete opposite of those things. Instead of appreciation, they got rejection. Nothing they did was ever good enough. Instead of affection, they got the cold shoulder. Instead of respect, they got the complete opposite of that in bitterness and belittling. And they saw all of these things growing up. And the bad thing about that is what we see, it's a principle of vision. What we behold, 9 times out of 10, we become. And here's what I mean by that. In our past relationships with seeing how our parents operated or seeing how key people in our life operated in their relationships or in past dating relationships you may have been in, all of those things affected your heart. Or you could put it this way, it filled you up with some things. And when we get married, we bring those things over into the marriage covenant. And that's what's happened to our couple today. Now, our couple today, they're really shy. I mean, you just think if I was doing marriage counseling with you in front of all these people. And so they're really shy. And so I want to ask everyone to smile real big. Don't let them think that you're judging them or criticizing them, that you're trying to help them sort through some of their issues. And maybe they can even help you sort through some of yours. And so I want to introduce you today to Mr. and Mrs. Mugg. They are here. They've been married for a couple of years now, and they met in college, and she was attracted to him because he had a lot going on for him. He was graduating from college, had good grades, seemed like he had a good family background, was coming from a place where it looked like he was going to be successful in life, and he was attracted to her. I mean, who wouldn't be? She's a knockout. And so they fell in love in college, and when they started dating, they were real gentle with each other, and they were sure not to rub each other the wrong way because they really liked each other, and they didn't want anyone to think that it wasn't going to work. And so they're just real gentle with each other and real nice to each other, and these feelings start to build, like we said last week, and all of a sudden they find themselves in love, and they're standing at the altar, and they're getting married, saying I do. And then about a month into the relationship, something comes up and they bump each other, and he looks at her and says, where did all of that come from? And she said, what are you talking about? And he said, all of that stuff that came out of you just then, where did all of that come from? And she didn't like that one bit, so they bumped again. And she said, well, where did all of that come from you? And he said, well, you're making me act this way. And she said, well, I'm not trying to make you act that way. You bumped me. Well, no, if you wouldn't have bumped me, this never would have came out. And so she got mad, and he got mad. And she went to go talk to her sister. And she tells her sister, I didn't know he was like that. I never saw that come out of him while we were dating. And then he went, well, we don't know where guys go. He kind of went to himself, you know, maybe he looked in the mirror, and he thought, where did that come from? And so they meet back together, and they patch things up, and they get back. But a couple of months later, something else comes up, and they bump again, and blue beads come out of him, and pink beads come out of her. And it's a constant cycle. And he's thinking, if she would stop bumping me, then this stuff would quit coming out. And she's thinking, you know what? If he wouldn't bump me, then pink beads wouldn't come out. But you know, the reality is this, is that the reason why blue beads come out of Mr. Mug is because that is what is in him. And Mrs. Mug thinks that the reason why pink beads come out of her is because Mr. Mug keeps bumping her. But the reality is, the reason why pink beads come out of Mrs. Mug is because that's what's in her. And if Mrs. Mug wants to stop the pink beads from coming out, it is not enough to get Mr. Mug to stop bumping her. Because the reality is, in life, you will be bumped. In life, there is no bump-free zone. I'll put it to you this way, and like we said in the dating relationship, you can play it very nice and be very sweet and try not to bump each other too much. Why? Because you're trying to win their affections. But is it not true that even in that dating relationship, you may have been in some other relationships, maybe with friends who bumped you, and the pink beads came out then? Or that other employee who bumped you, and the same pink beads that came out on him, that your husband, or the same pink beads that's coming out on that employee? Or maybe it was a parent, and when that parent bumped you, it came out then too? Because the reality is that's what's in us. Now, if we come into marriage, if Mr. Mug came into this marriage union with a healthy heart, and these blue beads represented, instead of anger, maybe they represented love. And when she bumped him, when Mrs. Mugg bumped him, because you will get bumped in marriage. I don't care how perfect you are, you will get bumped. Jesus bumped people. They didn't like him. And it brought out what was in them, a whole lot of anger. Jesus got bumped by a whole lot of people, you know, most notably being nailed to a cross. But what's coming out of Jesus when Jesus gets bumped? He's looking down and forgiveness is coming out of him. Excuses for their behavior is coming out of him. Why? Because that's what was in Jesus. Anger was in the Pharisees, so when Jesus bumped them, guess what came out? Anger did. That's when Jesus said, you are of your father, the devil. Because that's what was in them. And friends, if we're going to have a great relationship, and I'll just talk to Mrs. Mugg and Mr. Mugg here. If Mrs. Mugg, if she's going to have a great relationship, she needs to understand that the answer is not finding a new mug. Because even if you replace Mr. Mug with, you know, a Mr. Pitcher or a Mr. Glass, he would eventually bump her too. And the answer for Mr. Mug is not distancing himself from Mrs. Mug. Because how often does that happen in marriage, especially for men? They think, well, you know what I'll do? I just won't come home as much. And I'll just distance myself away from that because after all, I don't want her bumping me. Because when she bumps me, this stuff comes out. And I don't like it when it comes out, but that's what happens when she bumps me. And so what I need to do is to distance myself from her because I don't like what comes out of me when she bumps me. And so Mr. Mugg thinks that the problem is Mrs. Mugg. And Mrs. Mugg thinks that the problem is Mr. Mugg. In fact, I've never done marriage counseling before where two people came in and said, you know what? I'm the problem. I've never had a Mr. Mugg come in and say, you know what? I know it's all on me. And if I would stop doing these, you know what Mr. Mugg always says? She needs to change da, 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 da. In essence, she needs to stop bumping me. I've never had a Mrs. Mugg come in and say, the problem, it's all me. I know it's all me. And if I would make, no, it's always, no, he's the issue. That's he's who you need to be talking to because if he did A, B, and C, then we could have a great marriage. And what I've seen is this, that if Mr. Mugg will go to work on filling himself up with the right things, so that when Mrs. Mugg bumps him, the right stuff comes out. Instead of Mrs. Mugg running to her sister, she actually wants to run closer to him. And what I've seen is when Mrs. Mugg will decide to fill herself up with the right things, and Mr. Mugg bumps her, but when he does, acceptance, respect, forgiveness comes out. It actually draws Mr. Mugg back to her. The answer for a great marriage is not in your partner getting fixed. It's in me getting my heart as healthy as possible. People think, especially single people, this is how they think. If I could just find the perfect person, I could have a great life. But listen to me, my friends. The answer to a great life is not in finding the perfect person. It's in being the right person. Because I've met a whole lot of people who thought they married the perfect person only to come and find out they're not so perfect. And they are not near as happy then when they were single. The answer is in being the right person. In our story here in John chapter 4, Jesus must needs go through Samaria. And when he goes through Samaria, he finds this woman at the well and he asks her, will you give me a drink? And she basically doesn't want to. And so she's kind of questioning him as to why are you asking me to get you a drink? And Jesus says, if you knew who I was, you'd be asking me for a drink. And so let's pick up with that story here in John chapter 4 and verse 10. It said, "And Jesus answered and said unto her, If you knew the gift of God and who it is that saith unto thee, Give me a drink, thou wouldest have asked me of him, and he would have given you living water. And the woman said unto him, Sir, I have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. From whence then hast thou that living water? Art thou greater than our father Jacob, which gave us the well and drank thereof himself and his children and his cattle? And Jesus answered and said unto her, Whosoever drinketh of this water, they will thirst again. But whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst, but the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life. The woman said unto him, Sir, give me this water that I thirst not, neither come hither to draw. And Jesus said unto her, Go call your husband and come hither. And the woman answered and said, I don't have a husband. And Jesus said unto her, You've said well when you said I had no husband, for you've had five husbands. And he whom thou now hast is not your husband. And that sayest thou truly. This woman has been through five husbands. Now, either she's the most unlucky person in all the world and just married five people who maybe something happened to them, or they were just really, really bad people that she had to keep changing. Or maybe what this woman was looking for was joy. And when she didn't find it there, she went over here. And when she didn't find it here, she went over there. And when she didn't find it in husband number three, she thought, well, maybe husband number four is the answer. And when husband number four wasn't the answer, she thought, well, maybe husband number five is the answer. And then she thought, well, maybe husband five is not the answer. I'll go be with someone and just not be married at all. And maybe I can find some joy there, because this marriage thing just doesn't work. You know how many single people out there are now saying this marriage thing doesn't work, so we'll do it my way? Can I tell you that that is scriptural rebellion? And I say that as nice as I can. That just because the world does something and it doesn't work doesn't mean that we still don't do things God's way. And God has ordained marriage. He always had and he always will. Like we said last week, marriage was not man's idea. It was God's idea. So we are not ones to play around with it. It's God's marriage. It's God's idea. And this woman, she's been through five husbands, and none of them apparently have brought her joy. So the one she's with now is not her husband at all. What's she looking for? I would submit to you today that the reason why Jesus had this conversation with the woman at the well was to tell her that, look, you are never going to find true joy in these relationships if you are not right yourself. And what he was telling her is there is something that can provide you everlasting life, a life for you, a life for your family, and it's not in the arms of another man, that it's me, that I can draw everlasting life. And if you come to me, I can find and give you true joy. See, here's what I want to get at this morning. I've got 2 points, and my last 2 points are how to fill ourselves up with the right things. For whether you're single, to prepare yourself for marriage, or whether you are married, how do you fill yourself up with right things so that when you are bumped in marriage, at work, on the job, by a relative, the right stuff comes out? How do we do that? The answer is found in number one, Jesus. Jesus has got to be the center of your life. Now, here's what I mean by this. I was listening to a marriage series, and this gentleman was talking about this particular example. And he said that there was this man named Truett Cathy. He's the owner of God's Chicken, Chick-fil-A. Anyway, he started Chick-fil-A a long time ago. And Truett Cathy has obviously become very successful. And one of the things that he tries to do is to use that success to enhance the lives of not only himself, but other people. And there was a young gentleman who Truett Cathy knew, and he wanted to be a blessing to this young man, and he was going to bless him with some money as well as give him a car. That's pretty cool, right? And he called the young man in, and he said, "Here's what I want you to do. I want you to listen to these tapes." And at the time it was tapes. I guess it wasn't CDs or podcasts. Does anyone still remember tapes? I mean, I've got a couple of them sitting on my desk right now. But he gave him some tapes from a motivational speaker. And he told him, "I want you to take the time to listen to these tapes." And so the young man did what a lot of young people do. He kept putting it off and thought, "Yeah, I'll get to it." And so he saw Truett, and Truett asked him, "Have you listened to those tapes yet?" And he said, I've kind of listened to some, but I'll be honest, I haven't listened to them all the way through." And Truett knew that he hadn't. And we'll find out why in a minute here. And he saw him again a couple of days later, and he said, "Hey, have you gotten around to spend any time listening to those tapes?" And the young man said, "No, I haven't really, you know, put forth the time to do that yet." And so finally, Truett called him up and he said, "You need to bring the tapes back to my office." And the young man said, "Hey, I understand you need them back, or you need to give them to someone else." And so the young man came up to Truett's office, gave him the tapes, and Truett said, "Before you leave, I want to play something." He put in the last tape and fast-forwarded it all the way to the end. And at the end of the tape, you heard the motivational speaker talking, but then he closed and Truett's voice came on. And Truett's voice at the end of the tape, he had pre-recorded it, built it into the tape, came on and said, "I want to thank you for listening to these tapes. You know, basically, wisdom's the key to life, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And so for you taking the time to do this, I wanted to give you X amount of dollars as well as a brand new car." And the young man's head just fell, because he realized that Truett wasn't just wanting him to spend time with something, that there was a payoff at the end of it. And I want to submit to you as Christian people, especially to all the married people here, we know that spending time with God is probably a good idea, right? It'd be a good thing to spend some time in the Word, spend some time listening to praise and worship music, spend some time coming to church, spend some time in prayer. We know that that's a good thing to do, but how true is it that a lot of times we put it off until we have more time? "Well, I'll get around to it here when, you know, I've got this to go." And especially if you are married and you got kids and you're not an empty nester, you got a lot of things going on, a lot of places you got to be, lots of people you have to clean up after. And so it's easy to think, "I'll get to that when I get to that," as far as spending time with God. But can I submit to you this morning that spending time with God is not just a good thing to do? That when you do it at the end, there is a huge payoff. And the huge payoff is not only God blessing you, it's also God changing you. It's God molding you into the person He's created you to be. Can I submit to you that in Adam and Eve's relationship, you know, when they ate of the apple and the whole world fell into chaos, that you know the first thing that they did was this: they ran from God. You remember God came down in the cool of the day. He's wanting to talk to them, find out what went on here. And they're running from Him and they're hiding from Him. Did you notice that they hadn't started arguing yet? That Adam and Eve, when they ate of the apple and their eyes were open, he didn't turn to her and say, "How could you make me do that?" And she didn't say, well "You're the one who ate." They hadn't started arguing yet. That first they ran from God, then they started arguing. Your relationship with God has everything to do with your relationship with your spouse. Everything to do with. My relationship with God has everything to do with my relationship with my wife, Pepe. because Christ is the thing in my life that centers me. And I don't care who you are, what you do for a living, life can wear on you sometimes, and life can kind of weigh you down. And if you don't have that time where your love is sharpened and your peace is sharpened, then that marriage thing, I don't care who you are, it can start getting a little difficult. And bumps start happening, and you wonder, where did that impatience come from? But when you're with God, it centers you. Now, I don't have time to get to point number two, so we'll get to that perhaps next Sunday. I want to stay on this for the next 3 minutes. It's 9:27. I've got 3 minutes with you. They put it in big red numbers back there. I can't miss it. I remember when me and my wife first got married. And I met my wife in Birmingham, Alabama. My mother introduced us, and so thankful that she did. And as soon as I got to know Pep and got to see her heart, I realized that this is someone I want to be with. She has a healthy heart. And because I had spent the last couple of years before I met her getting my heart as healthy as possible, not only to pastor the church, but to be in a relationship with someone who would be my wife. And man, when we got married, it was a complete change for my wife. In the sense of, she was from Birmingham, so all of her family was there, all of her friends was there, her life was there. And now she's moved all the way to Jackson. And this is where my life is, where all my family was, and all my friends were, and my life was here. And so when she got married to me, and you know, she came in and we started setting up our life, and our home didn't have any furniture in it. She didn't have a car yet. And I was at a stage in my life where I was completely investing myself in the Lord because I inherited the church at a very young age, and I wanted to be as professional as possible in what I did, to study, to show myself approved before God. So I didn't have things like a TV or internet or anything. All I had in my house was books and tapes and CDs. And so I've got to go to work every day, and here she is in a house with no entertainment, no family, no friends, no car to go anywhere, no house to clean. There is no furniture. All I had was a bedroom set and an office. And so I'm coming home every day, and I am, you know, it's the best life in the world. I mean, because it's everything that I had in my life before, and I have a wife now. This is awesome. When I come home, I mean, she hasn't had anything to do all day, and so it's all about me. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And a couple of weeks into it, I started noticing that my wife seemed like she was getting a little bit sad. And so I talked to her, and you know, I'm doing the opposite of what I told you guys to do last week. Remember how I said Jesus was way up here and he saw us way down here, and he could have kept his position, but what he wanted was a relationship. So he left where he was, came down to where we are to lift us up to where he is today. And so what I'm doing is I'm saying, I'm way up here, so you come up here. You need to get happy. Come on now, get happy. And she agrees that that's a spiritual fact. You ought to have joy and you ought to be happy. And so she'd power through it. But the one particular night, she was sitting out on the front steps of her house and tears were coming down her cheeks. And I asked her, so what's wrong? And she said, I miss my family. I miss these things. And I gave these things up. And in my mind, I'm thinking, yeah, you gave up your life and your family and all your friends and your surroundings, but you gave it up for me. And yeah, you don't have those things, but you got me, and it's not computing. I I never will forget one day I was praying. This brings me back to getting filled with the right things. I was praying and the Lord really dealt with me that you need to come down to her level. And so I went to her and said, honey, I'm sorry. I said, it's not you. It really has been me. See, men say that when they want to break up with someone. Men, why don't we say that when there's an argument in the house? No, it's really not you. It's me. And so I said, what can I do to make this easier? Let's go up and see your family. Let's believe God for a car. Let's believe God to furnish this house. I started doing little things like calling from work to check on her. Just to tell her that I love her. Letting her feel that she's not all alone in a new place. Now, that didn't come because I'm such a good guy. I'd love to say that that was just me. But the reality is one day in prayer, God filled me up with that. So here's what I submit to you this morning. Like I said, I didn't get into half my message. That's okay. I'm a pastor. I'm not a traveling minister. I got you next Sunday and the next and the next and the next. You just got to keep coming back. But here's what I submit to you. You will get bumped. And probably your hardest bumps in your whole life will be in a marriage relationship. And the key is not trying to not get bumped, although that's a good idea. You should try to bump each other as little as possible. The key is that you filled yourself up with all the right stuff by making Jesus the center of your life. That when you do get bumped, forgiveness comes out, love comes out, unforgiveness comes out, peace comes out, prayer comes out. They hurt you, you bless them because that's what you're full of. And friends, if you're focused on doing that as a husband and your wife is focused on doing that as a wife, you're going to have not only a godly marriage, but a great one as well. Every head bowed, every eye closed, let's pray. Father,